Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It was like, we're going to run it for at least 6 yards every single time. Why are we going to stop? Michigan has got its system now. It's got its identity. It's going to beat the hell out of you.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
Hey, you know, you come back after the game. If we win, we'll be drinking. You should come back while the jacuzzi on. And then if we lose, you should come back too, because we'll be drinking too then.
And SI's Pat Forty.
USC people were furious afterwards with the refs. Furious. You can just see the cynicism wheels turning. Yeah, the Pac-12's out to screw us because we're leaving.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Unbelievable week. Week 7, one of the most exciting weeks of college football I can remember.
Yeah.
I covered the Michigan-Penn State game, which was a mauling, and we'll get to. By the time I got home, it was towards the I got to see all of the fourth quarter, at least, of the 3:30 games. There was so much going on at one point, I could not. I was, like, overwhelmed. It's like TCU storming back on Oklahoma State. That's going to overtime. And then you got this incredible Tennessee-Alabama game. And you get all this other stuff. And then it bleeds into the night. And you're, like, trying to watch 17 games at once. Like, just absolutely incredible. One of these days when you just... This just the greatest sport. There was field stormings all over the place. Colorado stormed the field. They won. TCU stormed. Utah stormed. Tennessee stormed. It's all over the place. So let's start in Knoxville. Ross, you were there. Let's take a moment of silence for the goalposts.
Yes.
One of which wound up in the river. Yeah. They took the goalpost, walked it out of the stadium, and threw it in the river. Which I applaud, although some barge is going to slam into it somewhere and kind of mess up.
Did it sink? I mean, here's the problem. Like, that's a collector's item, and you just threw it the river to sink?
I guarantee some of the sailgaters went in there. And I bet they dredged that thing out of there and got it on one of the boats down there, man. Because you're right.
I hope so.
That is a souvenir item.
A field goal? Like a goal post? What boat you got?
Hey, the boats are huge. Hey, I went on one of them. I went on one of them. It was probably 70 feet long, I guess.
Wow.
Probably the boat. It's huge. They're houseboats. They're these huge, massive houseboats. It had triple. It was a double, a two-story. They had a band upstairs. They had a jacuzzi upstairs on this houseboat. It was amazing, man. I didn't want to leave the boat for the game. I thought maybe the best story might be just on this boat. Little did I know, thank God I didn't stay on the boat. That would have been a problem. So no, it was an unbelievable game, followed by what has to be, for me, the
goalpost is like 45 feet tall.
Yeah
18 and a half feet wide.
Hey,
a 70 foot boat, plenty of room, Dan.
It's going to be like that Fansville episode where they're like, where's the goalpost, right?
I don't know if any of these...
How do you hide it?
I don't know if any of these sailgaters, if their boats were even, were even still in existence after the game, because they all told me before the game, well, I had this one, when I went on this one, and he said, hey, you know, you come back after the game. If we win, we'll be drinking. You should come back while the jacuzzi on. And then... if we lose, you should come back too, because we'll be drinking too then. Like, well, all right. So I walked by there. It was pretty electric. I didn't get on the boat at a midnight after the win. I decided that was better off going to sleep. So, but just incredible. I think that in 17 years of being a sports writer, I don't think I've ever seen as much a post-game scene quite like that. As many people all dressed the same color, all chanting the same thing, the goalposts, cigars everywhere, locker room cigars. It was wild. I mean, the energy in the stadium, it was just chilling. I'll remember it for the rest of my life. It was incredible. The game was incredible too, of course. Back and forth, offensive kind of slugfest between the quarterbacks. It was outstanding. Two guys that could win the Heisman, right? I mean, they showed it why. It was incredible. And then it was followed by just an absurd scene where, yeah, it was fun. And I got a souvenir. I showed Dan earlier, but I brought back a souvenir.
Oh, you got a stogie.
I've got a stogie with the Tennessee wrapper on it that some of them were smoking there. I was told they had over 300 cigars in the locker room ready to go. 100 of them had been there for years because they didn't ever win. And then they got gifted some over the last
might
few
have been a little dry.
Weeks,
yeah, 15 you know. Years. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Hopefully they had a good humidor there. I don't know if one exists to keep them that humid, but awesome game, awesome atmosphere, just super fun, and what makes college football the greatest.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Just the emotion that goes into these games and then the release, one way or another, win or lose, is so strong. And to see it in so many places, I mean, obviously, I think there was nothing quite like what happened in Neyland and around Neyland. And by the way, here's what you do when you tear down a goalpost. You take it like to Calhoun's or something, and you get a hacksaw and you cut it in 1-foot-long pieces so yeah. a lot of people yep. can have a there souvenir. Yeah. As opposed to one unwieldy 30-foot-long pipe. So yeah. anyway.
You can forgive Tennessee fans for not knowing what to do when yeah, they're a big victim.
Yeah.
I just throw it in. They're like, what do we do now? Well, this is my thing. How do the cops not stop? I mean, there's like 100 guys stealing a goalpost, and the Knoxville police couldn't stop them?
Well,
they had no interest in stopping them.
No, yeah. Well, the game day security came on, and I was watching, and I zeroed in on the video. Like, they were surrounding it. There was probably, I don't know, like maybe 12 to 15 probably security guards surrounding one in the student section into the goalpost. And every now and then there would be a rush. It was like watching a battle, like a war battle movie. And all the students would rush the cops. They would hang on the goalpost. They would kind of teeter. The security would ward them off enough, pull them down, and then it would start all over again. Then there'd be another wave. And finally, there was like probably a 10th wave, and the security was like, nope, we're done. And they just all walked away. And within probably 90 seconds, they fell. It was wild. And then at the other end, the security forgot about the other goalpost. The students didn't because they went and got them too. So.
See, it's like the Chinese army in the Korean War. They just send wave after wave after wave until you know they overrun your position.
Yes.
And then the videos by like Jim Dunaway of the Next Round Live in Birmingham. They do a great job down there. But he had great video of the students coming over the wall onto the yeah. field, and some of yeah. them just like falling on their faces.
Yep.
I mean, it was wild. But there will be some battle scars that people will have the rest of their lives that they'll remember from probably getting clonked on the head by a goalpost or somebody falling on top of them. But I think those will be well-earned and happy people in Knoxville, because that was something. Now, I was at a field storming, too. It was more sedate in Salt Lake, where it was hilarious. And actually, you know, they're just a little bit nicer and probably more law-abiding in general there. And, like, The main student section, the MUS, as they call it, they were starting to come out there, and they had to kind of wrap around and go down this little ramp, and the cops are just there, and they all just like, oh, okay, all right, we'll stop. But then the other end of the stadium broke loose, and they started coming from the other end, and then finally everybody came in. So
better
they
just
did
let
not
them
take
out
down
on
the
field, right? I mean, it's right. safer. You're not yeah. going to get people trampled.
Right.
The scene at Tennessee, because it was 15 years of buildup, and the invincibility of Alabama is just – you know, that's the perfect mix. It reminded me last year, I obviously was not at the Knoxville one. I was at the Michigan finally beats Ohio State, and it was similar. Mm-hmm. Like the energy and unbelievableness of it. You had it's not just the students that storm the field. You got like 60-year-olds hopping that thing. It's like, I'm going down. I may never see it again. Right. Now, the big thing with this was they won on the last play. Michigan, it was coming. They just beat Ohio State. This was like, oh, my God, we're going to lose. And then Alabama screws up the end of the game, and Tennessee makes this dramatic play and wins it. But let's talk about this game, and let's talk about Tennessee before we get to Alabama.
Yeah.
Could not be more impressed with Hendon Hooker. Could not be more impressed with Josh Heupel. Could not be more impressed with the whole Tennessee team. And this is why. And this is why I thought Alabama would win in a different – not only win, but cover. And at different times, they were going to win in cover. But every time Alabama did their Alabama thing and stomped on, about to stomp on the heart, the scoop and score being the biggest one. Hooker blows that hand off, and it's a scoop and score. Alabama is going to win this game, and this is when the other team crumbles.
Yep.
They pressure. It's like that old Mike Tyson line. Everyone's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth, and that's when Alabama wins the game. And Tennessee said, not today. Josh Heupel coached like he was not a fourth-year head coach, but like he was Nick Saban's equal, because he was. He was his superior on Saturday. No fear. This is a guy who won a national championship as a quarterback, and that he doesn't carry himself with that kind of like bravado.
No.
But it's in there.
Yeah.
And he just said, hell no, we're going to call these plays. And Hooker said, hell no, I'm not falling apart. That was the part about this game that was so exciting, I think, for Tennessee fans, because it was like we're standing up. And even when we start Tennesseeing or whatever you want to call it, or just succumbing to what Alabama is, we said, we're going to stand up and outdo you. And that to me blew me away about this game beyond all the individual performance and everything. They score 78-yard touchdown after that scoop and score. That 9 times out of 10 the last 15 years, that's a pick. They throw a pick and Alabama scores again and they end up winning by 24. And you're going, yeah, but it was really close. Yeah, sure it was.
Like the Arkansas game. It would have been like, you know, like Arkansas came the way back and then a couple things happened and that was it. And they kind of fell apart. Yeah, after the scoop and score, I think everybody in the press box thought, whoop, that's it. And you could kind of see everybody just started writing. Everybody started writing their story. That was it. And you look up and boom, they tie the game with a 70-plus yarder. Heupel is, you know, I spent almost a week in Knoxville and spent time with him. And he, I think, Dan, you described it right. Like he is super humble, quiet, mild-mannered, just kind of boring, you know, goes about the business. Man, every time I looked on the sidelines, that dude was jumping up and down or running toward the end zone. He almost made it to the pylon one time, like celebrating. He was in it, man. He was in it. And obviously he called the game that way as well.
Brilliant.
And I think of the last throw of the game, Hendon Hooker, I think there was 9 seconds left. He was at right around midfield or so, or maybe on the 45. Mm-hmm. They needed to get about 20 more yards. He stood in the pocket almost like a statue, just stood there. It was kind of started to collapse, and just stood right in there, fired a freaking missile, and his receiver took one step up. I think it was Brew McCoy, USC transfer, took one step up to grab it perfectly. And it was just to me, it was like this, that's just a Heisman moment, you know, and he had a lot of them there. And that was another one. And the freaking Jalen Hyatt, you know, 5 touchdowns, 200 yards. It was unbelievable. I mean Alabama, number 2 for Alabama, I'm missing on his name, but he could not. I felt bad for him by the end of the game. He just could not stay with Jalen Hyatt.
Alabama, no one who could, or they would have put him on him.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Here's my theory. Let me test this out on you guys. You tell me what you think. Second-year transfer quarterback comes in. First year, very good. Second year, takes it up to another level. You get an offensive whiz calling plays for him. You get this stable of receivers that's unbelievable, and you go say, we're going to go take down Alabama. Sounds like LSU 2019 to me.
I was about to say, I know what you're getting at.
You know? I'm not sure any of them are as good. I don't know whether Hendon Hooker's going to be Joe Burrow. I don't know whether they have a Jamar Chase, but my gosh, between Hyatt, Brew McCoy, Cedric Tillman, who's hurt.
It's a good comparison.
They may not have a Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I don't think they're
Joe Brady and Josh Heupel could dial it up.
They don't have the talent that LSU has.
Yeah, they don't have the defensive talent for sure, but I think it's a good comparison offensively. I do.
Now, I mean, this was great. And here's the thing about Heupel, and credit to him, credit to Danny White, who we talked about previously, hiring him.
Yeah.
Comes from Central Florida as the AD, an SEC team, and isn't afraid to hire his old coach at Central Florida, who had not lit the world on fire.
Yeah.
No, he hadn't.
He knew Josh Heupel was a hell of a coach. And that takes a lot of confidence. Because you're showing up, and look at, we don't have to go through the track record. Tennessee fans are a little vocal and active about their coaching searches. They're not just like, okay, let's give this guy a try. It gets toxic quick up there on Rocky Top, but he made that move. Year two is often when the great ones show how great they can be.
Right.
A program gets really good in year two, and they haven't been good. You know, Urban Meyer won a national title. Nick Saban, both at LSU and at Alabama, had his team in the Sugar Bowl as a second year and win the title. Brian Kelly started showing real signs at Notre Dame. The next year, they're in the BCS title game. Like, I don't know, Lincoln Riley, he kind of took over a machine, right? But if you look at some of the better coaches that we've had, that second year, you start seeing things. Well, we've seen it at Tennessee. We've always said it is an unbelievable place to play football. It's amazing they sucked for so long. Yeah. They're 3 hours from Atlanta. They got tons. It's a great little city. The state is producing more players, particularly in Nashville area, as this grows. That's like who watched the game? I don't care if you're like a 90-year-old grandmother or a 5-year-old kid and watched and said, I wish I was in Tennessee. Yeah. This is the greatest marketing I've ever seen. Look more fun than anything could be. His offense is great, and we get some defense. Maybe we can do it. Just an absolutely perfect night for Tennessee, and we'll see where it goes from here. But I got to feel really good about how Josh Heupel coached that game.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Like, and it is – year two, as you said, can be a real indicator, and now it can be even more of an accelerator, I think, with the portal and other things that you can do. But that's – I thought Josh Heupel, what he's done this year is like, okay, that guy's a freaking star. Offensive star coach, you know, and I was very tepid on the hire. I was like, you know, they just got whoever they could get at a time when it was difficult to get somebody. But the other thing too, to Danny White's credit, is not only did he do that, bring in just somebody who looked like a guy, but Danny White was brand new too. Danny White didn't have any cachet. He didn't have any capital. So
none. You know,
they kind of stuck their necks out there together.
Yeah, no, he did it up. Now look, sometimes it doesn't work.
Right.
Last year was – this is why I thought Mel Tucker was going to be so good. Second year, Michigan State's 11-2, and everyone was like, holy cow, you do that in your second year. They've regressed, let's just say. We'll see how that plays out. But so we're not there yet, but this to me was unbelievable. Ross, any more thoughts on what – on the scene, what you thought of watching before we get to Alabama?
I'll say something about – talking about the coaches' staff. Like, obviously, Heupel, it's Heupel's offense, and he's the head coach, and he runs the program. His offensive coordinator, Alex Golish, who kind of was off the Matt Campbell tree, spent a lot of time with Matt Campbell at Iowa State. And before that, where was Matt Campbell before Iowa State? Before he was head coach?
Toledo.
That's right. Yeah, he was spent time with Campbell there at Toledo. And I visited with him for Wednesday or Thursday before the game with Alex Golish, and spent some time. And he was walking me through how he kind of calls plays, how he and Heupel go back and forth with the play calling. It's really interesting. It was fascinating. The guy watches, he said, upwards of 8 mock games each week heading into the game. So he watches games of the opponent's defense and kind of calls play, mimics calls plays. And it was really fascinating.
And very interesting. He's obviously,
he's done a great job. So he was watching Alabama's games against Arkansas when Alabama was on defense, and he was acting like a play caller. He'd say he does 7 to 8 a week. Each one takes an hour and a half. So it was fascinating to see. And they work together. I mean, he said, you know, Heupel sometimes will suggest this and that. And it's Heupel's offense. But he's learned it. They work together. They've gelled pretty good. And Alex is certainly someone who isn't scared. And as we saw, I think we saw that from the game. I mean, they launched it up there. And it was a blast. And it was fun to watch. It really was. And I think, you know, and somebody said, a couple people have said this yesterday, but when the king falls every now and then, it's good for the kingdom. Like it's fun. And I think we all can kind of agree on that.
Except unless you're wearing crimson.
Kingdom.
Yeah, fun for us, but we got something to talk about.
How many times have we all covered Alabama games where we're like, I wonder if something interesting will happen. Yeah, maybe they'll get upset. And like, no.
Well, it's funny to hear, too. After the game, it was funny to hear the Alabama beat writers because, you know, they cover win after win after win after win. But when Alabama loses and when it happens on the road, they're used to what happened. It's a field storming every time. And I was talking to Michael Casagrande of AO.com. The last time an Alabama team won on the road in the visiting team, I'm sorry, an Alabama team lost on the road and the home team didn't storm the field was 2010 against LSU. It was something like a dozen losses, a dozen in a row or something like that of field stormings. 2010 was the last time. It was fun to hear the Alabama beat writer say, yep, well, here we go again, like another field storm. They didn't even get – listen to this. The Alabama beat, most of them, didn't get to the Saban news conference. They couldn't get there. It was crazy.
Wow.
Is that right?
Yep.
I don't know, man. That was either like, yeah, it, combat paid is trying to get anywhere. What a mess. I saw the band was kind of locked in their spot.
The Alabama band was stuck. It was stuck right there.
They couldn't get out of their seats.
They couldn't get out. It was wild. And then, you know, the Alabama team had trouble getting out of the locker room. They had trouble getting out of the locker room onto the bus. There was security kind of holding back the Tennessee fans. And then
you got to do a better job of that.
And AO.com did a great job on some scenes after the game. John Tolte tweeted out a picture of, this is amazing, of Derek Dooley. He's eating a platter of spaghetti out of a styrofoam, like to-go carton, and he's got his back to the camera, and above him, you see Tennessee fans walking and like chanting. It's an amazing photo. You got to go check it out.
Dooley now on the Alabama staff.
An analyst for Alabama, former Tennessee head coach.
I saw that.
Just crazy. So eventually, Saban got out of there, and I think the timestamp on it was like 8:45 that he left, which was pretty long after the game. That was not normal.
He'll be heated about that. He probably wasn't happy.
Yeah.
It's already behind in preparation. Already behind.
Yeah. On to the Bulldogs. Yeah.
A couple things on that. First off, spaghetti as your post game meal?
Carbo load, Dan. Carbo load.
Come on, man.
Kind of messy.
How bad is that spaghetti?
It's probably pretty bad. Well, spaghetti kind of keeps well.
Spaghetti gets better in the
South anyway, and then you went with that. Whatever. Tough one for Derek Dooley, but this is the stuff that happened. I don't know. Look, it was incredible. I've said on this podcast before, Clemson stole Tennessee's program. Tennessee might be trying to wrangle something back. They're not going to take it from Clemson, who looks awesome. But this is what you want out of Tennessee, and they certainly delivered. All right, let's get to Alabama.
Yes.
Okay.
Alabama.
This Alabama did the things they normally do to win, but they didn't. But they also did things to lose. 52 points, most since like, was it 1906? I think the stat was.
Well, most against a Nick Saban coach team since 1996. The Michigan State Spartans.
Michigan State?
Yeah, Nebraska, top ranked Nebraska put up 55 on Saban's Sparty.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have all of that. You have what I thought was big was the end of the game situation.
Yeah.
Among others. First off, let me say this about Bryce Young.
Mm.
That guy is unbelievable.
Woo! Incredible. He's a baller, just a straight baller.
Absolutely.
They lose by 4 touchdowns without Bryce Young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And if they win, everybody's writing about him. He's the story. Because he was electric. He was incredible. It was incredible to watch.
One of the best performances I've ever seen. They lost the game, but it wasn't his fault. Let's just go to this last bit. It just was stunning to me because we're just spoiled by Saban doing everything right. They have a first down at the 32-yard line with 38 seconds left. Tennessee has 2 timeouts, and he calls 3 consecutive pass plays, or Bill O'Brien does. Now, one was into the flat that got dropped. It should have been caught. But on 3rd and 10 – they put 5 wide, and none of them run like a quick slant or anything into the flats just to get something. They miss on all 3 as Tennessee just bull rushes them. They tick just 17 seconds off, and they still have to kick a 50-yarder. And Saban said, we're trying to move the ball closer because it wasn't close enough. And I get that, but you also have to play the other side of this, and Nick Saban, normal game, still the greatest, but he's, I don't care. He's got to be killing himself. You got to run the ball and at least make Tennessee waste the timeouts. Instead, they give the ball back and allow what was an incredible drive and a knuckleball kick. But still, they should have finished this game out. They should have won. They certainly shouldn't have lost in regulation. And I have not seen anything like that last minute debacle fight by Alabama and all. And I can't remember.
Yeah. The two things there, one, I think to me that I think this was an indication. They were, had very little confidence in Will Reichard after last week when he made one out of four field goals. Yep. So they're like, we don't need 5 yards. We need 15. We need 20 to get him closer, which may have been an overreaction. Because he certainly didn't miss the 49-yarder by that much.
Yeah, he just pushed it barely.
But, yeah, it was like they almost just didn't think of what could come after the field goal. You know, it's like they didn't think that far ahead. It reminded me just a little bit when Alabama seemed to have no idea in the kick six game that if you try a 55-yarder and comes up short, oh, they may run it back on us. You know, like there's just that little glitch. And like, as you said, I mean, Saban so rarely glitches that it kind of stands out, I think. But that was very surprising the way the end of that game was managed.
Yeah. It reminded me of the Bills last year when they kicked off against the Chiefs with 13 seconds left.
Yeah. Yep.
And instead of squibbing it and killing time, and it's like, they can't get down the field 13 seconds. And it's like, that's Patrick Mahomes over there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just that was stunning to me. Obviously, 17 penalties. Penalties.
Woo! That was bad. Yeah.
Killed them. That the interference on that last pick where the guy
interception.
Went.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge play.
Everybody started writing their stories there too. We nobody saw the flag in the press box. We were shocked. It was it was late. Everybody's running back, like, whoa, what's going on? And the replay showed, I mean, there were two PIs, obviously, kind of late in that game that really got to both fan bases. And I think, you know, it kind of evened out because you had the two, but the Tennessee in the end zone that gave Alabama extra set of downs, and they ended up scoring on that fourth and goal, I believe, on that. And then, of course, the interception, you know. But, yeah, there were a lot of 17 penalties, the most of the Saban era. And I think the second time this season they've had 15 or more. Penalties, they've set the Saban-Alabama record for penalties twice this year already. Yeah, just a sloppy,
both undisciplined
thing.
Both the games you attended, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Things were not... Things were not... we're not used to by Saban teams. And then the muff punt, again, things we're not used to a Saban team.
That was just dumb.
I don't know what is going on, but things were just... We're not accustomed to seeing.
We are used to the bad field goal kicking, so at least there was that.
Yeah.
And I understand trying to get closer, you know, with the pass. I get that part. I do.
Yeah, but the passes weren't on third and 10. They needed a slant. Yeah. They needed a slant. They needed something to get five. They needed something to get seven and at least cause
a
timeout.
Like a draw or something, you know. I mean,
or a draw. They needed something to kill clock. Instead, watch the play again. Five wide. Everyone's running up and outs to take too long. You know, Bryce is forced to just kind of throw off his back foot. He throws it way deep. Basically, he's throwing it away, I think. It was not a good play call for that spot. You need a quick little bang. Hey, 5 yards, you know, maybe you get more. But something that's easy, quick read. Because, yeah, they're going to blitz. They're going to blitz the heck out of you. All right, too quickly, because we've talked a lot about this game. This sets up, if Tennessee can hold together, November 5th, monster matchup against Georgia. Tennessee's up to number 3 now. And Alabama's obviously not dead. They got control of their destiny. They get back to the SEC championship game, and I'm sure they would be happy to run it back with a split crowd. So SEC race, though, getting way more interesting than it was 48 hours ago.
Certainly. Excellent scheduling by Tennessee to have Tennessee Martin next week.
Yeah.
I mean, on the off chance you win that game and the hangover is going to be incredible for everyone, fans, players, coaches, administrators, Tennessee Martin's a good one to slip in there.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Game I was at. We had a lot to get to, so we'll be a little quicker on that. That game was epic, though. Game I was at was not epic. Michigan 41, Penn State 17, and the 17 came off of two kind of I mean, their place. There's a pick six on a ball that bounced off a guy's helmet, and there was a just a totally misread QB run option by Sean Clifford. Other than that, Michigan destroyed Penn State. This was a near perfect football game for Michigan. I could not believe what was happening. They just ran it 55 times, 418 yards or something like that. Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, they call them lightning and lightning because neither one of them's thunder. But they're just ridiculous. The line destroyed Penn State. The defensive line destroyed Penn State. This looked like they were playing a MAC school and not a good one. J.J. McCarthy made a few plays downfield, but he said after, I'm content just doing this. It was like, we're going to run it for at least 6 yards every single time. Why are we going to stop? Michigan has got its system now. It's got its identity. It's going to beat the hell out of you or try. And there's a lot of defenses out there that are built to stop the spread. And Michigan can exploit that. And I could not have been more impressed with what the Wolverines did. They're 7-0. Their hardest game remaining before Columbus is Illinois, which actually looks really good. But it would not surprise if they are 11-0 going into Columbus with the exact same game plan as last year. We're going to try to maul you. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. But pretty interesting. Pat, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, that was an absolute like physical mauling, which was impressive from Michigan and really troublesome from Penn State because they just can't stand up to the best teams in that division anymore. And you are locked into a big, expensive, long contract with a monstrous buyout with James Franklin. And what exactly are you getting for your money? You're getting maybe third best in the East, but a really distant third. So that's a difficult situation for them. But yeah, you know what? Michigan, they turned the corner last year and they've stayed around the corner. They are who they are and it's really good. I mean, they have good players everywhere. They've got a scheme that they love. They absolutely get after you on the trenches on both sides of the ball. And, you know, if they can physically punish you, they will. They're in the top 10 nationally in rushing, top 10 in yards per carry. And they, you know what, it's kind of a nice counter-programming to what we have seen and seen and seen this season. It's just dudes just chucking the ball deep all the time and it working a lot, which is a whole other story. Yeah. But Michigan's like, nah, we're just going to hand off until we kill you. And it was impressive.
Turn back the clock, man. It's like the old school football. And I'm just like I was diving deeper into the stats. I didn't see a lot of the box score of this game. And holy cow, 55 carries and 418 yards on the ground for Michigan, averaging 7.5 yards a carry. Wow. That was a beating.
First downs in the first half were 18 for Michigan, 1 for Penn State.
Wow.
Yeah.
One first down.
I was watching it like, how the hell is Penn State in this game?
Yeah, they got these two plays, but it was
one was a total fluke.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And Michigan needs to get his red zone offense in order because they're going to need touchdowns, not field goals. But honestly, like this game could have been 60-3. It was bad enough. For Penn State, you know, look, they get Ohio State in a couple weeks. And to me, they have to – this is like a – I mean, this is like a who are you game. Maybe you don't win, but you cannot just get trounced like this again.
Right.
You know, look, they're Penn State. James Franklin's a good coach, and they're going to go 9-3 or 10-2 this year. And that's really good. And we shouldn't be in a spot where it's like fire a 10-2 coach. But they have had, other than 2020, when Michigan was horrible during the COVID thing, they've gotten killed at Michigan. They never went on the road. They never beat top 10 teams. And this was just completely non-competitive. I mean, this was just this was not the 10th best team in the country. And look, they had earned that. They had won big games. They had gone to Auburn. I know Auburn's losing, but they crushed Auburn in a way most of the SEC is not crushing Auburn.
Yeah.
So there was something there, but this wasn't it. wasn't it. So
I'm really interested to know if Penn State's or if Michigan's, identity, this kind of older school mentality, run the ball, you know, if that works, if it goes all the way through the season and works against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, in a potential playoff matchup with some of these teams that spread it all out and chunk it down the field. I'm really fascinated by that kind of dynamic there.
You know, the problem is maybe it worked obviously against Ohio State last year.
Yeah.
The problem is you get a defensive line like Georgia had last year and you ain't moving anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
No, right. Georgia you just physically obliterated them.
Right. Right. And so, you know, with J.J. McCarthy, they have that arm. They don't have the greatest receivers, but they have good ones. But they're just really good all over the field.
Yeah.
And, they have not had a great year recruiting, but they've got a bye. And if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I am hitting up. I am trying to flip everybody.
Yeah.
Because it's like, look what we're doing. And I'm going right after everyone Notre Dame signed.
Yeah,
I'm going everyone Wisconsin signed or has committed and anyone I want from all these other schools in the Midwest and saying, look at this. You're an offense alignment. We're Wisconsin, what Wisconsin could never be because they can't get the athletes to go around it.
Right.
We'll get athletes. We're Michigan. We're going to recruit some 5-stars, right? And we're going to have a 5-star QB, and we're going to have a really highly rated guy like Edwards, and we're going to find our guy like Blake Corum, but, you know, we'll get him and see where you're at, or at least the transfer portal, because this is a heck of a system, and it's really working. All right, game you were at, Pat. USC falls. Wild game. I felt throughout watching USC was going to win the game. They did not win the game. Final drive. Kyle Whittingham goes for 2 with plenty of time left. Did not think that was a bright idea, but he did it. It worked, and they won. What happened in Salt Lake?
Yeah, what happened in Salt Lake, Lincoln Riley said afterwards, he said, at times I thought we were going to run away with it, and it looked like they were a play or two away from taking a 21-point lead, you know, and having all the momentum and just looking like the better team, and then something would happen. Roughing the passer call takes away an interception, and then they score. Another roughing the passer call keeps alive a drive where they score. And both those roughing the passer calls were close. USC people were furious afterwards with the refs. Furious. You can just see the cynicism wheels turning. Yeah, the Pac-12's out to screw us because we're leaving. I don't know whether that's necessarily the case. I doubt it, but that's where their minds were going. The big problem is, look, they're defensively, they're just not very good, okay? Like, they have made their hay defensively on two things. Getting after the passer, they had the leading sack guy in the country going into the game. He didn't get any sacks. And then causing turnovers. And they only caused one turnover in the game. That literally, Utah's last 6 possessions were 5 touchdowns and a fumble. They could not stop them. They turned their tight end, Dalton Kincaid, who's a very good player, but he looked like Travis Kelce and George Kittle combined. He had 16 catches. It was the most in the country by anybody this year. Incredible performance by him and by Utah. Utah's a good team, and they have a lot of pride, and they had just gotten beaten at UCLA, and they hate USC. And they rose up. But still, USC let this one get away without a doubt just by simply being bad on defense.
All right, interesting. May or may not take USC out of playoff contention. We'll see. They still can come back and avenge this. They could still.
Yeah, probably going to need a lot of help.
They're going to need some help, though. They can't win. You know, they got to win the South with something else. So, and they're going to need a lot of people to. There's got to be some chaos. But we'll see how that sets up. I will say this. Caleb Williams, unbelievable player.
Jeez. Woo. He and Bryce Young, like, they're dudes that just make stuff out of nothing.
Unbelievable
player.
Yeah.
He was arm incredible. Strength, athleticism, and total daring, like, confidence. Like, I'll figure it out, and I'll chuck it in there. I mean, you know, I'll throw it 60 yards. I'll throw it 30 into traffic, whatever.
Here's your thing. Second-year transfer QB next year.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and he does have to do another year of college.
He has to do another year of college, and he is ready to not do another year of college. I did it. All right. Another one. TCU looks beat at home by Oklahoma State. And then they're not. They come back and tie it, send it to overtime, end up in double OT, win the game. Sonny Dykes, undefeated at TCU. I think we might have picked some TCUs here. I can't remember what everyone picked, but
I was Lone Frog. I was right, except for I lost by a point.
Oh, because they were giving points, right?
They were giving four, which
that's right. You know, that's right.
Giving four, 1-3.
But I think we all thought TCU might be, you know, other than that, the rest of us thought Oklahoma State, I'm sorry, has shown they were, you know, really a dominant team. And I mean, at one point they're up 30-16 in this game. You know, looks like they're going to run away with it. That was like at the end of the third quarter. But TCU comes back and scores 14 in there and wins it. So Max Dugan played an incredible game. What were your thoughts on this? And what, you know, man, TCU, the Big 12 is a mess. Everyone's good. They still got K-State. But what do you think, Pat?
Yeah, the receiver they have is really big time. Quentin Johnson, 6'4", 212. He's big. He makes tough catches. He's huge, fast.
Huge TD in overtime, 25
yeah,
yarder right
yeah, away. He's had two huge weeks in a row against undefeated teams. And I remember them talking about him at Big 12 Media Day, like, watch out. You know, this guy's going to be a superstar, and boy, is he looking like one. So, no, I mean, look, Sonny Dykes is that another. It's like just a great offensive mind, and you give him a quarterback and you give him some skill guys and look out. It's just going to happen. And now the you know, the added dynamic is, yeah, the resolve, the character, there was whatever, poised to come back when it looks like you're beat. There were a lot of similarities between that game and USC-Utah, where the team that won was never ahead. Like, TCU never took the lead during regulation. They tied it late, then they get into OT, double win in double OT. But they just keep slinging, keep chucking, and they've got athletes. Defensively, we'll see how well they hang on, you know, hold up for the long haul. Can you win a conference championship with a defense like that? Maybe in the Big 12 you can, but it's going to be a question mark. But they've got very, very good offensive players, and they do have that kind of confidence and belief in themselves right now.
K-State next week. Worth noting just simply this. TCU has already defeated Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, and that is no small thing for that program.
No.
And Texas obviously is waiting. They survived Iowa State. There's a whole bunch. The whole league's fun. Just a fun league.
It is. Fair enough.
Yep.
All right.
No bad teams.
No bad teams. Really aren't. Really
a lot of mediocre teams, but no bad teams.
Like that West Virginia Baylor game on Thursday night was fun as hell.
It was really
Friday
fun.
Night or yeah. Whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, that's indicative of the team too. Those are both like, you right. know, kind of mediocre to okay teams.
Mm-hmm. All right, we will talk more about this program this week because they are walking into a huge game against Clemson. But worth noting, Syracuse Orange are 6-0. They beat NC State, which was without quarterback Leary. He's done for the year. NC State's pretty much cooked. They're going to have another 8-4 season. But still, 24-9, Syracuse wins. The Carrier Dome was sold out and rocking. I will say this again. When that place is sold out and rocking, it's as hard as anywhere in the country to play. It's a totally bizarre environment. It's a tiny dome. It is loud as hell. It can get hot in there. It's not air-conditioned. There's no climate control. It is crazy. And so Syracuse is back, and Dino Babers, I mean, he had a good year a few years ago, then a couple bad ones, and now here they are, just a monster game. Garrett Schrader, Sean Tucker, just a good solid victory for the Cuse.
Yeah, I think their big key is they're just defensively have gotten so much better. Second year defense coordinator Tony White, he was a Rocky Long guy when, you know, Rocky Long spent forever in the desert out there at New Mexico, and then he went to San Diego State, and they won games. He would win like 9 games a year, 21-17, because he was just a great defensive coach. And Derek White's a chip off of that, or Tony White, I'm sorry, is a chip off of that block. He came in last year. Their defensive yards allowed improved 130 a game, and they dropped 6 points allowed a game. Now this year, they're way up from that. They're the best defense in the ACC at the moment in terms of yards allowed, and I think in terms of scoring too. And that's just made all the difference, where before it was kind of almost just touch football with Dino Babers, and now they've gotten a lot better on that side of the ball. Big, big, big thing for them.
I keep waiting. You know, Syracuse is one of those teams. And I think we said the same about, like, you know, Ole Miss and Michigan, you know, teams that you know, the first 4 or 5 weeks, they didn't play anybody. You know, Syracuse's strength of schedule rating is like 118th in the nation. But we're going to find out, this coming week. I know we're going to talk about that game later, two undefeated teams in Syracuse and Clemson. But I'm really excited about seeing how good Syracuse is. I think that will be quite telling. But it's an impressive start. I mean, we talked about it. We kind of thought that Dino was on the last year here. And, boy, it just shot out. And their defense is playing good, Pat, as you mentioned. I've only allowed more than, I think, 20 points like once, right, against Purdue.
Yeah.
So impressive.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun. We'll talk a little more about that. All right. A few more I wanted to get to before we, there's way too many games. I mean, there's just way too many, way too many games. Illinois, 26, yeah. Minnesota, 14. Tommy DeVito, quarterback, really good. 25 of 32. Chase Brown ran it 41 times.
He's the old school back, man.
Oh, goodness.
He's going back to the 80s and 90s when you just gave it to one guy all the time.
He also had 180 yards rushing and 53 receiving. Eighth straight 100-yard game. It's the defense that impressed me even more about Illinois. Terrific. This is Minnesota. They have an offense. Their players are back. Ibrahim played. They shut them down. Great passing defense. This team's 6-1. They should be 7-0, but they're 6-1. And Purdue's still out there, but amazing. And we talked about that 2-year deal. Well, guess who's in his second year? Brett B.
Yep.
Getting it done.
It's fantastic. They have a rock star defensive coordinator too, and Ryan Walters. He'll be a head coach, I think, this next year. He's just done a phenomenal job there. But it is so the Bielema formula. It's just it's almost heartwarming, you know, because it's just like, we're just going to absolutely pound the ball, and we're going to D up, and we're going to grind out wins. They've won with scoring 24, 9, and 26 this season. Three times they've scored in the 30s, but they are perfectly happy to just run it, play a short game, play field position, stop you, and walk out with a win.
Well, it's one thing for like Michigan to play that way and win with Michigan athletes. I'm like kind of scratching my head of how Illinois is able to win that way. It's fun. It's fun to watch. I saw the video of Bielema like diving into the team in the locker room. Like he kind of like rolled like a kind of like a bowling ball right into pins and knocked down a couple players. And it's fun. It's a great story. It really is.
It was interesting. They're on the field after the game. Someone's interviewing them, and he's like, it's bye week. I'm going recruiting. Like he got that out there in the first 5 seconds. It's like, I'm coming. I'm going to get better athletes. Yeah. What he has done with what he was given from a listless program. Amazing job by Brett Bielema. So Ross, we talked about this LSU Florida grudge match, a coaching grudge match. LSU won, looked really good. Jaden Daniels looked terrific.
Yeah.
Went on the road. Oh, Brian Kelly's 5-2. Yeah. First year. We told you the guy's a hell of a coach. You can dislike him. You can laugh at him. You can do whatever. All those Notre Dame fans that were just, our old coach is a jerk. I like our new coach. He seems nice. All true, but careful what you wish for when you got a guy who knows how to win football games.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, through his Notre Dame tenure, and I remember talking to some Notre Dame people when he got the job at LSU, and a few of them said the same thing. Brian Kelly's teams will get better during the year. Like, you'll see marked improvement in Brian Kelly's teams through the year. And maybe that's a little bit what we're seeing. This series is just the most bizarre. I think LSU's won four straight. And get these numbers in this series. First of all, that was the 69th meeting of the two teams. All right, the series is 33-33-3. It's amazing. It's amazing. So awesome. But also give it up for Josh Williams, junior running back from Houston for LSU. I think he ran for over 100 yards. I mean, he's a big part of kind of why they were able to ice the game away there late. But Man, I would not have guessed if you told me after week one, right? LSU loses, Florida State looks terrible, looks sloppy. Florida beats Utah in a wild game in the swamp. And here we are, and Florida is 4-3, and LSU's 5-2. LSU goes there and really win handedly. Man, you just never know. Those openers always give you some kind of false sense of reality.
Yes, they do.
All right, and we'll do this one. Kentucky steps up. They get Chris Rodriguez back. Really good running back, 197, two TDs. Will Levis plays a really good game. They beat Mississippi State 27-17. Mississippi State was riding very, very high. They got knocked down a peg in one of those just really interesting games. I don't doubt, Ross, you see anything on that game? You're probably covering the
other a little bit. I saw a little bit, like maybe the last, probably the last half quarter or quarter or so. You know what really surprised me? Will Rogers, Mississippi State quarterback's been rolling, tearing it up. You know, 300-plus yard games, 400-plus yard games, five touchdown games. He had 203 yards passing, one touchdown, and one interception. A QBR of 65. Mark Stoops' defense, incredible. They held him just about, I think, his worst game in a long, long time. And then on the ground, Mississippi State couldn't get it rushing. I mean, Kentucky's defense just in general, really, really solid. Picked off Rogers late to kind of seal the win. Impressive. Really big win in Lexington. And never know. Maybe the Wildcats healthy with Will Levis back there. If the offensive line can continue to improve, maybe they can shake it up a little bit. I mean, they already got two losses in the league, so I don't think they're winning the East. But maybe they can shake it up and pull one out against, like, a Tennessee. Who knows? You never know. I think they do have to go to Knoxville in a couple weeks, so that's going to be tough. But never know. It's a big one for the Wildcats, and Kentucky's defense, incredible.
Yeah, it's been a very good defense this year. They haven't given up more than 24 points in a game so far. But that's, give them the credit for showing some character and some resolve among several other programs that they'd lost two in a row. And I think people were starting to get off the bandwagon. I know in the state of Kentucky, I mean, they had Big Blue Madness. Everybody starts talking basketball and they're like, oh, wait a minute. We're not done here. We'll take down a ranked team. And it is nice. I mean, they have one loss without their star quarterback, one with them. On the road in a very close game against what currently undefeated team. So they are a legit team. And yes, Tennessee had better be ready on October 29th.
All right. And then this story got sent to us the most. And this is what I love. I mentioned this to some people I was talking to the other day at the Michigan game. A horse craps on a football field. And
it was incredible.
Like 200 of you decide that you must immediately send me tweets to let me know, alert me to this thing happening. Like
over and over and over.
Popped in your head was, I got to tell these guys.
Just amazing.
SMU's mascot, Paruna, a black Shetland pony. Had to say that carefully.
Shetland.
Took a shit on the field against Navy. He was running out there. I think it's a he. I don't know. Whatever. My horse doesn't have anything, so.
No, your horse doesn't.
What is gender in horses anymore? Anywhere? Paruna is running out on the field to celebrate a touchdown and starts dropping bombs out there. Needless to say, they have to spend 15 minutes trying to get all of it because that would just be horrendous.
Yeah, you don't want to be tackled in that.
No. Ooh. And so the Navy-SMU game is delayed. A great thing about Paruna, I looked up, was originally known as Parsons. They had the horse back in 1913 or something. They renamed it Paruna. Paruna was a type of, like, illegal booze in Texas back in the day.
Okay. All right.
So leave it to SMU. They always win the party. I was about to say,
this is an SMU story all the way. Absolutely.
Yeah. SMU won the game 40-34. George W. Bush was there. Got to watch the horse crap. Maybe the horse was scared.
I mean, it's important. And how about the student
president?
Shout out to the student assistants that took, it was brilliant, actually, took two Gatorade cups and made them a pooper scooper, basically, and scooped up the poop It was impressive.
It's a good point because you don't have a pooper scooper on hand, right? You probably they should plan on it.
Now they should definitely now have that.
Yeah.
It's amazing this doesn't happen more often. Like Ralphie just lays one out or something. I mean, that would be, I imagine, would be massive. Or Bevo or like what?
Maybe that's why, you know, Ralphie's time on the field is short. He just runs around and then goes back in that van.
Well, this horse was only out there for quick.
I know.
It wasn't long.
Know enough from going to the racetrack. When you're on the backside, they just poop all the damn time.
Yeah.
Like all the time while they're just walking along. So it's a constant hazard.
Yeah. I would think this would have happened more often.
I must have watched that video 50 times. I just cackled the whole way. I mean, it's just crapping as it's running. And then the handlers are running behind it, stepping in the crap. Oh, yeah. And they don't realize that it's crapping, I guess. And then the official's got to run over there and tell him, and you can see the official's face. He can't help himself. He's cackling as he's telling them, your horse just crapped all over the field. You better go get it, you know, go pick it up.
You guys are going to have to clean it up.
It was amazing. I mean, it was amazing. Like, we're not going to get a more fun, to me, we're not going to get a more funny moment than that. It was awesome.
Oh, the instant replay, like they were showing it, the broadcast was terrific. There it is, leaving a little something behind.
Well, fertilizer.
The dangers of Peruna, big star.
Small right, sample Heisman, Peruna.
We'll give him a small sample Heisman, and it's time for small sample Heisman. So we don't like giving it out at the end of the year. Let's give it out now.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the small sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Pat, you have a small sample Heisman ready?
Yeah, I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, but I can't help it. I've got to give it to Dalton Kincaid, the Utah tight end. I mean, it's just ridiculous. 16 catches, 16 for 234. And at the end of the game, he's like exhausted. He's banged up, but he's in tears because he's so happy they won. Phenomenal, just incredible performance. I do have to say, like, USC – Were you ever going to actually try to cover him? That was like, were you going to do anything different to try to actually prevent him from getting the ball easily open all the damn time? He made two really difficult catches that were really impressive, and that's where you look and say, that's an NFL pass catcher. You know, where catch radius, difficulty, athleticism, covered. But a lot of the times he was open and they got him the ball and he was just really good. So Dalton Kincaid and the whole scene in Salt Lake was just great, but give him my small sample Heisman.
All right, Ross.
I'm going to go to somebody in a team that we haven't talked about that much since early in the year. North Carolina, in North Carolina's quarterback, Drake May. He tore it up against Duke, 28-38, 380 yards, 3 touchdowns, and led the team in rushing, 70 yards, 18 carries. Guy put the Tar Heels on his back. And they got a big win. And hey, look at North Carolina. 6-1. They lead the ACC Coastal. They should win the next two games. They got Pitt at home after a bye week. They got Pitt at home. They go to Virginia. And then the big one, they go to Wake November 12th in a game that could probably, you know, go a long way for the if North Carolina's going to win the Coastal. But they, you know, right now they lead by a couple games. So give it up for Drake May in the Tar Heels that are rolling. They're only lost to Notre Dame, which, you know, a team that we haven't talked about a lot. But head-scratching how actually North Carolina lost that game at home. But they did.
My small sample Heisman goes to West Virginia senior defensive tackle Dante Stills. He was all over the field in West Virginia's victory. 43-40 over Baylor on Thursday night. Every time there was a play, every time they needed a pass rush, every time there seemed to be something to do, he was there. Stats don't even do him justice. He had 4 tackles, but a couple QB hurries, some QB hits. Biggest play of the game when he jumped through and blocked an extra point by Baylor that teammate Jacoby Spells picked up. Went the length of the field, gave him 2 points, kept that thing within reach. This guy's great. I love him. I love a kid that is like, this is where I'm going to play. Maybe I could have gone somewhere else, but this is my school. This is my family's school. I'm not transferring. I can do everything here. Yeah, we're not that great, but I'm just going to be this. And so they had a great night on Thursday. It was a great scene out of Morgantown. Loved it. Country roads, man. So congratulations on winning my small sample Heisman. All right. We haven't been too mean in this podcast, but we can always be nicer. There's room for improvement. Pat, do you have any room for improvement? Say something nice.
Yes, I do. I'm going to say something nice really about both of the dregs of the Pac-12, Colorado and Stanford. Both of them appeared like hopeless, especially Colorado. My God, they were terrible. And then they turn around and they win a game. They beat California. They got up early. They fell behind. You figure as soon as they fall behind, they're done. No, they rally and they win. I think they won an OT over the Golden Bears. So good for the Buffaloes and their field storm, even if it was probably slightly ironic or cynical, I guess you would say, sarcastic. And then good for Stanford, who had not beaten a FBS opponent in more than a year, going back to when I was actually there when they beat Oregon, when Oregon was ranked number 2 last year. And they blew a game last week against Oregon State, but they rally, they go into Notre Dame, and boy, Notre Dame's a whole other issue. But to win that game, hang tough, 16-14, they fell behind, I think 14-13, and go down and kick a field goal to win. So nice for the Cardinal and the Buffaloes to end some suffering.
Pat took mine. I had the Buffaloes too. I was doing some math on their last six. I think they were on a 6-game losing streak dating back to last year. Colorado was. They lost those 6 games by an average of 28 points. None of them were within 1 score, let alone hardly 2 scores. And interim coach Mike Sanford, right, gets the leads the Buffaloes to a victory. I will come up with another one here, and I'll say something nice about the Arkansas Razorbacks, who were on, I believe, a 3-game losing streak, and then had a trip out to BYU. You got to deal with the time change and the long flight and all that stuff. You're on a 3-game losing streak. You're kind of beat up. Your quarterback's beat up. And man, KJ Jefferson lit it up at BYU. 367 yards, 5 touchdowns, threw the ball 40 times, ran the ball 30 or 40 yards too. So, give me the Hogs for getting back on track in a tough game.
I had some Hog fans staying at my hotel in Salt Lake. They were fired up to be out there. It was good.
I am going to say something nice about the Tulane Green Wave, who are now 6-1. And 3-0 in the American Athletic Conference. Now, this was a team that went 2-10 a year ago, who under Coach Willie Fritz was 31-43 in his first 6 years. Probably could have fired him. Was going absolutely nowhere. They beat South Florida 45-31. They've turned around the entire program. They've got, games coming up. Memphis, UCF, SMU, we'll see how it bears out. But they own a victory over Kansas State where they racked up 561 yards. They look like a good football team, if nothing else. They've put some punch in football down in New Orleans. And a team that absolutely no one had contending for the American is contending for the American. And it's one of these teams, and it's a lower level. But it's just exciting that anyone's excited about Tulane football as we enter late October, the same way it's exciting for someone to be excited about Syracuse football. We'll see what happens, but you know what? You got big games coming up, and I hope the city of New Orleans passes them or supports them. I'm sorry. So
they're ranked this week, ranked for the first time in 24 years since they had that undefeated.
Yeah, did they crack in? What are they?
Yeah, they did.
Good for them. Yeah. And Willie Fritz. I mean, 7th season. Here we are.
Yeah,
talk about the great ones. Get it done in 2. It was a little slower on the draw down there. No, hey, they're good. And fun team scoring points. So congratulations to them. And yeah, that came, they lost to Southern Miss. They're probably kicking themselves for that in the Battle of the Bell. But that win, Kansas State's a good team. They beat them. So
yeah, that's a big win, really.
On the road. So good for that. All right. That was a marathon edition. A lot going on. Season's cranking. We'll be back on Tuesday. more fun. Looking forward to week 8. So continue to subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us, all of that. We will talk
tell us about
to,
crapping horses. And
yeah, if a horse craps on a field, again, alert me immediately. I cannot, my Friday night cannot go another 2 seconds without me knowing. Like, what is going on in the world that, like, hundreds of people around the country? What have I, how have I lived my life?
It is an indication.
Horse crap the field bigger on Twitter. Tell this guy.
Hey, something stupid happened. Tell the College Football Inquirer guys.
And yet I appreciate, I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, I know. No, we accept all stupidness.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So much stuff in the world I do not know that's going on in this one. All right. Again, talk to you later.